I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
This is Eat, Sleep, Work, Repeat, a weekly series of podcasts about happiness and work culture. Hi, it's Bruce Daisley. This is Eat, Sleep, Work, Repeat. If you missed last week's episode, it was a special, a live special on laughter. That was quite good fun, indeed. Fabulous audience. And actually, I wrote something for the BBC about laughter, which I've tweeted out from our Twitter account. On these podcasts, I've spent a lot of time talking to academics and experts and sort of people who've got all the receipts, but probably less time speaking to those who've got strong opinions and strong visions. And today, these two episodes from quote marks, thought leaders giving their views. I had a week off last week, so I was able to get two shows done. What are thought leaders? Well, I'll ask them that question. In the second episode, we're going to hear from Chris Barres-Brown from a sort of culture agency, a culture consultancy called Upping Your Elvis. And first, we're going to hear from Tom Goodwin. Now, Tom is an executive VP at the media agency Zenith. He's the head of innovation down there. But it's on the web that Tom's a real player. He's LinkedIn's number one influencer. That accolade will set you back about 560,000 followers. How did he end up there? Well, Tom wrote a tweet or a series of tweets that developed a life of their own. If he was Dua Lipa, this was his new rules. A big smash that made him a go-to person talking about business disruption and differentiation. Tom's responded to his internet renown with a new book, Digital Darwinism, Survival of the Fittest in the Age of Business Disruption. That's out now. Tom lives in New York, so I was very surprised when I turned up to meet him last week that he's actually British. He went to Sheffield University. How about that? Here's Tom. Tell me this. How do you, thought leader, right? How do you, as someone who's a thought leader, stay ahead of these trends? How do you, what's the process you use to try and stay ahead of what's changing?
I mean, very quickly, I find the expression thought leader very uncomfortable, and I don't like this world where somehow these people are anointed with power to lead thought and other people follow, because I think that's nonsense. I think I'm lucky to have a group of people that listen to me and then I listen to them in return. But to be more helpful to your question, I mean, firstly, I read a lot, so absolutely huge fan of Twitter, probably the best single item in my life in terms of software. So I just digest vast amounts of information as quickly as I can. Secondly, and this sounds quite cliched, but I travel quite a lot because I really believe that by you know, being in the favelas in Rio de Janeiro and seeing like kids with virtually nothing watching TV on smartphones, being in a canteen for a consumer electronics company in China, and seeing how people pay for food in the canteen, being in Estonia and speaking to the government ministers about X-Road and how they're using blockchain, there really is sort of no substitute, one, for sort of being in those places, but two, sort of connecting the dots between them, you know. So individually, those things don't mean much, but when you can sort of go to these places and then get on a plane and quite literally sort of rise above the planet, like it can sort of gives you a greater sense of oversight, I think.
And so are they accidental opportunities to observe, or are you sending yourself out into the canteen in China?
A mixture. I mean, right. I'm extremely lucky these days in that I get invited to do quite a lot of stuff. And I'm quite considerate about what I choose to do. So whether it's speaking at events, whether it's being on more official company programs, whether it's meeting clients, whether it's just taking a holiday somewhere a bit more interesting than the south of Spain. I just think the world is a really interesting place, and it's a particularly fascinating time to be alive. So I just sort of apply that energy to sort of get myself in these situations.
And what does a day in the life of a thought leader look like then?
Thought leader. If I was denying that I'm a thought leader a lot. I mean, in what can only be called the most predictable and annoying answer ever, like there really is no sort of standard day. So it involves a lot of reading every day, and it involves a lot of listening to people, quite a lot of asking questions on social media and then looking at replies, quite a lot of meeting clients and talking to them about their business, quite a lot of travel. I try to sort of meet different people as well. Like, I think it's quite easy in our industry to spend our whole life talking to other marketers.
Yeah.
You know, it's good to talk to like a farmer and just be like, what's worrying you? I think my favorite question in the world as I go around it is to sort of talk to people about challenges that countries or companies have, because you realize there are quite a lot of commonalities. Mm. So whether it's the how parents are worried about how their kids are growing up with screen time, whether it's various different countries around the world being worried about sort of global movement of people and how to deal with that. I think artificial intelligence and what that will mean for employment and meaning in people's lives, that's becoming like another theme that, that people talk about. I make a habit of not reading boring pieces, actually. Like, there's a huge amount of complete crap out there. Like, if I read one more piece that talks about CES trends as the Internet of Things, or, you know, smart dishwashers, or fridges that predict what yogurt you're going to eat. Like, there's just a lot of not particularly thoughtful, quote-unquote, thought leadership. So I'd much rather read the opinions of someone that's quite punchy and quite naive and sometimes wrong, just because it helps you think about things a different way.
It's funny, isn't it? Because there's no rear view window. I remember going to CES and going to one of the things that was like the hot trend of 4 or 5 years ago. And reflecting 4 or 5 years on, none of those things have happened.
I mean, we've got people who are kind of professional trend forecasters actually have got a pretty poor track record. Like, we like to sort of look at the graphs of anything that goes up and presume that they carry on that way. You know, so in theory, Second Life should be how we all spend our time these days. And we should all have loom bands and we should all have fidget spinners or something. But actually, most new technology you can kind of look at, and I mean, maybe this is a bit arrogant, but I feel like you can feel your way through it. Like, you could look at 3D TV and just go, this isn't that good. You know, I don't think I can imagine going to my mate's house and watching football.
It's funny you say that, though, isn't it? Because
for
4 years, the whole of the movie industry was obsessed that 3D is the solution, right?
I think they're very... they believe in what's most helpful for them to believe.
Right.
You know, when Steve Ballmer said that the iPhone was never going to take off, I don't think he was necessarily an idiot for saying that. I think he was just aware that that was the most helpful thing he could say at the time.
He was a hype man for the Microsoft product, and so dissing the competition.
Yeah, it would have been quite hard for him to say, you know, this is interesting,
looks
guys.
Pretty good.
I mean, I was at Nokia at the time, and we knew that the iPhone was going to be a big deal.
Right.
But yeah, you can look at curved TVs and just go, I think it's more important for people to have a TV that looks nice against the wall than it is for people to have a viewing experience which feels slightly more immersive. So I'd like to think that common sense helps us. I mean, generally speaking, we prefer things that are easier rather than things that are better. You know, so most people today listen to music on really crappy iPhone docking stations, often in mono. And the reason people do that is just because it's a far easier way to listen to music than it is to get some, you know, complicated connected speaker solution set up. I've got a really big TV that is probably one of my most sort of extravagant purchases, and I pretty much just watch stuff on my phone in front of it with it on in the background. And it's just because it's there. It's just an easier way to do stuff. And I think in marketing we tend to forget that actually hardware very rarely is what makes the difference. It's normally software. You know, like Ubers themselves are the same cars that were driven by taxi drivers. It's just now easier to hail one. You know, mobile banking apps actually changed the way that I experience banks way more than the banking sort of infrastructure itself. So yeah, we tend to sort of overestimate the impact that hardware will have, which is why CES is always quite So it's strange and we underestimate software. If there was like a CES for software, then that would be a much more illustrative example of how the future will change.
Who's the book for?
The book's for anyone that's interested in change. I think it's quite hard when you write a book like this because you do feel like you need to have a specific person in mind. But while I think it's quite useful for CEOs to get a holistic viewpoint on the changing world, I actually think if you're a student studying business, if you're a CMO, if you're someone that's trying to set up your own company, I think most people will get something quite interesting and profound and thoughtful from it.
Let's go back to the start. You did this famous, was it LinkedIn post? Which is sort of...
Actually, there's a hidden story. So okay. I at one point when I was, my career wasn't going that well and I was in my sister's house, one day at her dining room table, I did the tweet. So the whole like Facebook, Uber, Airbnb thing was a tweet, I think in about 2014. And no one noticed it, I didn't get picked up anywhere. And for some strange reason, about 3 months later, I was like, this is a good tweet. Like, it's been unloved. Like, this deserves to see the light of day again. So I used it to write an article for TechCrunch. It became the opening line. And for about a month, nothing happened again. And then one day, it just sort of blew up. And I don't know, you could probably do some studies into the nature of virality and why it happened and how it happened and what ingredients came together. But it became, I think, a worldwide phenomenon, I think, is probably an overclaim. But it became something that got used in a lot of presentations and I'd get quite a lot of mentions. And then I also saw many other people claiming it to be theirs.
Amazing.
So it just became a very funny calling card.
Talk us through the tweet. Go on, remind us what it
says. I
can't
even know if I can remember what it says.
Go on, I've got it in here, haven't I? I've got it in here. So it says...
It starts with Uber, doesn't it? Uber is the world's
says,
largest...
Uber, yeah. Uber, the largest taxi company, owns no vehicles. Facebook, the world's most popular media owner, creates no content. Alibaba, the most valuable retailer, has no inventory. And Airbnb, the world's largest... This wasn't 140 characters. Airbnb, the world's largest accommodation provider, owns no real estate. Something interesting is happening.
Yeah, I think it was three tweets.
Right.
I think the strange thing about it is it became one of these... things that took on a life of its own, again quite often unbundled from my name, which is how life works, but also it became used to describe lots of things that were happening. So I saw lots of people using it to describe the sharing economy, lots of people using it to describe disruption, lots of people to use it to describe the power of digitalization or globalization. And it became sort of strange how so many people sort of read it with their own personal opinions sort of thrown in at the diagnosis. But yeah, I've sat in quite a lot of meetings where people have used it against me when I've claimed that it was mine. They kind of were quite incredulous about it. I've been at conferences where people have used it before me, and then when I use it later on, you know, they're kind of bored by that point. So it's been a very funny and interesting and useful experience so far.
And I guess the book is an extension of that, right? It's unpacking that.
Yeah, I mean, I think... hopefully there are more ideas in the book than just that alone. Like, I think that quote has given me the confidence to think that I might have some interesting opinions. It's allowed me to get my voice heard in different places, it's improved my follower account. And because I now have a sort of, I mean, audience sounds quite pretentious, because there are people that appear to listen to what I've got to say, but most importantly, because there are people that then join in the debates, it's allowed me to sort of create an environment where I can learn from a lot of people. And I think the process of me learning through debates has given me all of the fuel for this book. And it's a book that's quite wide in nature as well. Like, I'm not a huge fan of business books that effectively take one idea that you could meaningfully explain in 15 minutes and then pad it out to become a whole book. Instead, this became a sort of bundling of themes that felt appropriate. One of which is about this idea of the thinness of the internet and how platform businesses can expand very quickly. But more generally, looking at the changing business environment, changing consumer behavior. So I'd like to think that the book sort of takes us on a sort of journey through quite a lot of different themes.
One of the things that I guess I wondered going through it was whether there was a degree of survivor's bias in some of the stories, you know, like that thing that when I was reading, you know, that you explained that Netflix are a great example because they disrupted themselves, right? You know, like, and we sort of reach for these disruptors, but disrupting in itself isn't always the secret route to success, is it?
I think there is a huge risk of this. I get worried by the number of times, especially in America, that billionaires get to stand on stage and basically explain everything that happened in their life retrospectively in a way that makes them somehow seem genius and makes other people for not making the same decisions look stupid. And the reality is that, you know, Hipstamatic was a much better app than Instagram, but for some reason it didn't take off in the same way. You know, VHS and Betamax is another one of these examples. So I think that there is a huge risk of cherry picking the examples to tell the stories that you want to tell. And I was very mindful in the book that it wasn't ever trying to be a kind of simple guide where the sense was that I had all the answers. It was, I felt more comfortable being someone that was asking questions, because everyone's business is in a different situation and everyone has different appetites for risk. Everyone has a different time plan, sort of time scale over which they want to make these changes. So I'd like to think that I don't hold these companies as being specific, actionable examples of what to do, but just more to give hope for the fact that these kind of dynamics can work in people's favor.
I really like the expression that I wrote down. You said that, you know, often... You told me the phrase picnic. I never knew this sort of...
I problem in chair, not in computer.
Right, okay. Yeah. So picnic is sort of what IT guys say when they go back to each other and they they use this. And often the problem in businesses is the people in the business.
Yeah.
Their thinking, right?
Yeah. I think in companies we get very obsessed with things that are really important to us that are actually completely irrelevant to other people. I think marketing is probably an industry that's particularly guilty of that, where we assume somehow that people walk down the grocery aisle and they want to get like behind the scenes content of the latest Persil commercial, or that they want to read all about the provenance of the kibble that's in their dog food. You know, the reality is that most people in that moment are just trying to stop their kids from screaming. They're sort of worried that they've not got enough money to pay for everything. And I think a key part of every single business challenge, I think, is being very empathetic about what people are really feeling. And then to try and be more helpful. You know, for so long, advertising has been about interrupting people and yelling at people. How do we apply the same sort of creativity and knowledge of technology and knowledge of consumer behavior to just make it easier for people to buy things and easier for people to get customer service and stuff like that?
So would you see your book as an instruction manual or as sort of stimulus for people? Are people going to pick it up and solve the problems that their business is facing?
Yeah.
Or is it going to provoke discussion?
It's designed to be stimulus with the role, with the notion that it will aid the diagnosis and with the goal of creating optimism and then to start the process of making good decisions and asking the right questions to get in the right direction. But to be perfectly honest, I mean, I'm sort of 39, so this idea that I can write a book which prescribes to the entire business world what they should do, I know it kind of presupposes that somehow I know more than CEOs of auto companies or CFOs of insurance companies. So it's designed to be sort of energetic and exuberant and creative and provocative and interesting, with the goal that it asks questions that perhaps other people in the industry, myself included, can start to answer together.
Because you mentioned along the way that, you know, we have all these demands on us, emails and Slack and all these sort of communication channels. So bringing it to evolving the world of work, which you touch on a bit, but how do you think the company of the future is going to be set up and designed to advantage itself of these things?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that you can't help but notice is how badly, generally, most companies have used new technology. Like, we still kind of orchestrate and organize ourselves in ways that feel quite like the actions and structure of 200 years ago. We tend to sort of add new technology as a way to aid quite archaic processes. We even label technology with kind of almost skeuomorphic versions of the past, the inboxes and outboxes and in-trays and the trash can and... you know, most of the sort of language of business hasn't really changed. I think there's a really significant piece of work to be done where we map out what technology makes possible. So maybe it's instant messaging, whether it's things like Slack, whether it's mobile-centric communication solutions, whether it's always-on video portals between different offices. We can almost sort of map out all of the technology that exists today. Map out technology that will exist soon. So whether it's artificial intelligence, improved connectivity to cloud-based storage, And then probably rethink every single process that exists in a business around that. So it doesn't mean that everyone fills in an Excel spreadsheet every week, someone collates it, someone then uses a pivot table to make sense of it, and someone renders out a PowerPoint presentation. It means that there's just a dynamic web dashboard where everyone feeds in their information, or maybe it's done automatically and someone just renders it out each week in real time. Maybe this is a bit boring, but I find hotel reception desks really interesting. You know, because in bygone eras, hotel reception desks were there to keep the keys and they were there to kind of keep all the invoices. And then as time goes on, you know, that technology became smaller and we had contactless hotel keys. So then hotel desks used to just be like a big desk with a kind of big computer on it. Then the computer became a laptop. And then now quite trendy hotels have an iPad. But everything about the hotel check-in process is still the same. Like they keep the big desk and the computer's just got smaller. If you were to rethink what it should feel like to go into a hotel today, it actually wouldn't have a big desk with someone sat behind. You would just sit down, get a glass of wine, hopefully, and someone would come over to you and say, you're all checked in now. And I think that process of, rather than kind of adapting incrementally to how things have changed, to actually sort of reimagine stuff around the potential of the new, that's the sort of process which, while that's a metaphor, it's also a precise example. If we think about that example in other aspects of our business, it becomes fascinating.
Because you talk about how supermarkets have done self-checkout, and you say, you know, it's the mistake for them to think that's the end point. Mm-hmm. You know, that they need to be thinking how we evolve beyond that. How will they evolve beyond that?
I mean, there's two things. There's one, which is within the existing world, how do you do a better job of checkout? And what I love about the Amazon Go store, which has just opened in Seattle, is that for decades, we've just added in more technology. We presume that more screens and more special offers and how can we use iBeacons to send people personalized coupons. We presume that it was all about more technology and more visible technology. And what Amazon Go shows is it's actually about humanity. It's actually about understanding what people want, which is to get in, get out as fast as they can. And the technology completely exists in the background. Like if you go to the Amazon store, you see that there aren't actually any screens at all. There's fewer demonstrable technology in an Amazon store than any other store. It's just in the background.
Is this what you mean? Because you say that the world's as complicated now as it will ever be, don't you? Like we're at peak complication.
Peak complexity.
Right. Yeah. And is that what you mean? Basically, the technology is going to recede into the background.
Yeah, that's precisely. So everything that we've done now has been kind of cumulative. You know, when we talk about the fact that media is dying, like actually we've never had more media opportunities in the world. We've never had more advertising. We've never had more different ways to consume stuff. Like nothing has really been eaten. So at this precise moment in time, we have all of the sort of baggage of the analog world with all of the introduction of the digital world. And no one's really sort of made sense of it and reduced it down and made it more simple. If I want to watch, you know, Breaking Bad on my TV tonight, my first decision is which remote control do I use? Then I have to try and remember which app it's in. Then I have to try and search, you know, probably using my voice, which doesn't quite work. So there's all this kind of complexity that gets in the way of the stuff that we want. So my kind of hope is that while things are the most complicated now, when companies work around technology and when they kind of recreate customer flows and workflows, that things will just be simple.
Right.
Maybe it means I walk into an Avis rent-a-car location and they just have a car that I can use without filling in paperwork 7 times. Maybe it means I can go to a doctor in the US and I don't have to fill in 25 forms with precisely the same information in each chart. Maybe it means that I know when I get into a car that it'll already take a credit card, or that my bank account will be transferred from the US to the UK as I move location. I'm kind of hoping to get to a time when technology can make things more simple, and at the moment it's mainly seemed to make things more complex.
Yeah, that's it. If great innovations are solutions to things that people are sitting there banging their head, like car rental.
Yes.
Every time you rent a car, you're like, has no one ever rented a car from these people before? They seem surprised that someone's turned up.
But this kind of, I mean, my biggest worry when I wrote the book is that I came across like some spoiled guy that has all these first world problems. And it's important for me to say that there are bigger problems in the world to solve, like wealth inequality or famine even. But At the same time, if you are in a business, and I mean, the hotel business strikes me as being remarkable, where when you make the booking, you give your credit card details, you then arrive at a hotel desk, and the very first thing they ask you to do is all the admin that they should have done themselves. And then when you check out, you're then sort of asked to do it all again. It feels to me like no person that's ever worked for a hotel chain has ever gone to another hotel in their entire life, because you quite quickly change that. Hotels for me are interesting because they're very high touch businesses. So every time you go into the loo in a toilet in a hotel and you realize there's a phone there, you know, and when you realize that there's not an iPhone charger, and when you realize that the Wi-Fi is slow, you know, it's as if these companies have never done sort of customer research or something. So whether it's the process of buying a car, renting a car, getting in a plane, taking something back to a store, whether it's booking a complicated holiday, whether it's trying to find an apartment to rent, I'm generally, while I'm a very happy and optimistic person, I'm still quite surprised at how little we seem to have worked around new technology.
So you mentioned that, don't you? You mentioned that actually a lot of change is incremental.
Yeah.
It's sort of like what you can get. So the hotel having a phone in the bathroom is a perfect example, right? Because it's just all, that's always been the model.
Yeah.
So, you know, when they build new rooms,
there's
a phone in the...
Muscle memory.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And so that incremental thing often gets swept away by someone who does it differently.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I said in the book that I feel most vulnerable about being called stupid is me challenging the nature of sort of agility and this kind of continuous process and improvement, and almost like this forever beta approach. You know, there is this sense in business that everything needs to be slowly changing, and you Q&A, you A-B test everything, and everything's small. I think it's interesting to think about the opposite approach, which is how do you create a structure and a system with the very best technology, maybe not change it for 4 years, and then rather make all these tiny little changes, then create an entirely new system with the very best technology again out of scratch. Because, you know, when you go to Heathrow and you see that it's barely functioning, but it always just about works. When you see the railway network in the UK and it's always been maintained to keep it in the same sort of level of okayness, it makes you realize that bold gestures, so whether it's building a brand new high-speed train line, whether it's building the Hyperloop, whether it's rather than sort of continually refurbishing your house, it's to just build a new house every 10 years. As a sort of metaphor for how to think about business, I do think there's something quite interesting about what would happen if you just have these bold gestures less frequently rather than this always-on approach. Mm.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
What advice do you feel, reductively, if you were going to do that tweet again today, what advice do you feel companies should have? Is it a sense of curiosity? Is it a sense of...
A couple of things. I mean, I think one, I mean, you kind of gave me the answer, but one, be curious. You know, I think it's everyone's job in business to be learning about technology and learning what technology makes possible. To be curious about how people behave, how people make decisions, what people are worried about at the moment, what problems people have that they can solve. I think that's the first stage. Secondly, is probably to look ahead a bit more into the future. Like we tend to sort of spend most of our life in business looking at the business plan for last year and then changing it. We look at the marketing plan for last year and then we add in a bit more mobile. We look at case studies of Nike Plus from like 15 years ago as if somehow this is something we should be learning from today. I'd love us to sort of change the focal point from rather than the past into the future. So we should be spending more time thinking about how mobile is going to change people's lives, spend more time thinking about the power of 5G and what that will mean for the business environment. So I think between the curiosity and understanding of the future, and then thirdly, just a bit more passion. You know, I think if you were to take most CEOs out for a drink and ask them how they feel about the internet, most of them would wish it never happened. Mm. You know, if you were an architect and someone invented computer-aided design, it was the best day in your life to be an architect. If you're a painter and someone invented metal paint tubes, it now means you can go outside and paint things. Collectively, the entire business world, to me, does not feel like it's full of people that wake up every day and go, I can't believe you can do this now. Mm. And, you know, there are some companies that have good reasons for wishing the internet didn't happen, but there are many that if they understand what it can do for them and if they get more optimistic about it, can completely transform their businesses with it.
Yeah, I used to, back in the day, a while ago, I used to work at a magazine company.
Yeah.
And I used to be astonished that the execs, number one, none of them were on Facebook.
Yeah.
Number two, none of them used the internet.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, it felt like if you're not at least observing and participating in these technologies, then you're sort of missing something that's fundamental and societal.
Yeah.
It seems strange to me that, you know, they lacked curiosity to such an extent that they weren't even interested in exploring these things, even if they weren't natively interested in the platform.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's bizarre, isn't it? I mean, for one person to not do it, it's almost ignorant, but for everyone, it's almost like a campaign of an agreement to sort of deny its very existence.
Yeah.
Again, I think that's what I mean about companies thinking about this stuff and thinking about the future, because it might not be that the solution is for them to do something about Facebook and to completely re-engineer their business around Facebook and pivot to Facebook. But at the very least, they should be looking into it and deciding in an enlightened way not to do that. There should be a sort of robust business-making process, a business decision process behind it. You know, there is a sense that I have that these companies are not that happy about reality, and it's far more comfortable for them to all look at each other in agreement that this is not a good idea, rather than sort of questioning the very foundations of their business. A key thing for me that hopefully comes out in the book is there are lots of companies that are just really not built in the right place, and they're not particularly suitable to adapt to change to the world. And rather than giving up, you know, I would hope that these businesses find ways to completely recreate what their future entity should be. So if you are in the publishing business and you have a great brand, then how can you use that brand to make money in different ways, whether it's exhibitions, whether it's influencer marketing, whether it's opening up a new line of paint products? You know, there seems to be little imagination about what businesses can become.
I guess to finish, let's cast our eyes forward and sort of think of the future. So you've mentioned AI, you've mentioned sort of a lot of these things that are probably looming in the background and becoming a bigger presence. But what are you excited about right now?
I think I'm excited about us getting more mature with technology and for us to start to really, really understand its meaning. So I think when you look at business problems, when you look at people's lives, whether it's healthcare, whether it's personal finance, whether it's education, I think if you were to look at everything today, right now, you know, this is a really amazing time. Like, kids in Africa can now learn anything that's ever happened on the planet just by having access to like a $10 tablet. When you look at the ability of technology to help people sort of diagnose their own health, when you look at the ability of knowledge to help get people to be more mindful and more relaxed and more creative, I think if you basically were to look at the environment and the canvas that technology creates, we've been obsessed with the challenges it's created and the business dynamic that's disruptive and how fast everything is. But if you take a step back, it's actually just creating pretty much like the most interesting and the most abundant and the most sort of inspirational time to work in any business or just to be alive.
It's interesting what you say there, isn't it, about the tablet? Because you remember One Laptop, One Child,
yeah,
and sort of the,
yeah,
those
yeah,
things?
Yeah.
And it was like this big august plan that you're going to put these $200 laptops in all these kids' hands.
It was big.
That's right. And actually, sort of tablets have swept that away, right?
I think it's a good example of how we think that solutions are going to be sort of top-down and someone creates a mandate for it. And actually, it's more likely to be the, you know, a second-hand marketplace and a decent 3G network and all of a sudden an entire generation of people are now able to sort of create their own future. Not least, I mean, I'm aware that most of the sort of software development world is based around solving the problems that the founders have. You know, so pretty much every app is a way for a 25-year-old to get laid or to get pizza. There are very, very few apps that are actually built around more meaningful problems. You know, so how do you help people in sub-Saharan Africa, you know, get to the local town when there's no bus? You know, what does Uber for sub-Saharan Africa look like? What kind of mechanisms can you create so that people can feel together around the world who sort of share particular health problems? Or, you know, when technology's dribbled down a bit further and when it's kind of matured and when the dots have all come together, I actually think we could see some apps and some hardware that, you know, makes a huge difference. And we just don't know that yet because it hasn't happened. We're not aware of those problems. But I think that will be a really exciting thing to see.
When you travel around the world, you've sort of hinted at like this sort of colourful travel plan. Where's the place that you look at that you think, wow, this is really exciting?
I mean, anywhere in China is kind of like that. One of the most amazing thing about China is they've never really had this other interim. So when you go there, every single airport is brand new. And they haven't really had this interim period of high street retailers. So they've kind of built themselves entirely for the e-commerce world.
Okay.
They built themselves kind of entirely for a world where you don't have ATMs because cash isn't as big a thing. So I've never been anywhere that just feels so sort of thrustingly in the future as China. You know, the buildings kind of dance with LEDs that are on them. The architecture is like nowhere else.
Oh, get out. It's Blade Runner, is it?
It's totally Blade Runner. I mean, it's nuts. You know, the freeways are sort of elevated and sort of lit up with kind of ultraviolet lights. Like, it's more Blade Runner than Blade Runner itself. I mean, it's not perfect in every way. Like, the pollution's an issue, and the degree to which people are kind of transfixed by phones the whole time is quite scary to me.
More so than in the West?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's a very odd environment to be on an underground train in Shenzhen or Shanghai or something. I mean, almost the opposite, but somewhere like Sweden I find very inspirational. Mm. Because they seem just a bit more comfortable with technology and a bit more comfortable with its role in people's lives. So there, you know, whether you can find out anyone's salary in all of Sweden just by going to some website, so you can find out where anyone lives.
Well, I was hearing that the law of unexpected consequences, they say that that's a, it's causing big social issues because it's like a snooper's charter.
Yeah.
That if you don't like your next door neighbour, finding out what they earn.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing about the software is it tells people that people looked at your salary.
Does it?
Yeah, so you basically get a notification saying, you know, Mrs. Smith from downstairs found out your salary.
Oh, get out.
And then I guess you think, oh, let's see what she earns. I think, I mean, more than anything else, I like to sort of not come to logical, straightforward, like binary conclusions. I think it's more that it's interesting. You know, what happens when you have a culture which is transparent? Like, what happens when you lose privacy in that way? I'm not saying it's all good, but for a country like Sweden, where they seem more comfortable with it, it's certainly very fascinating to see what that means. And then you start thinking, well, would that work in the UK? Would that work in America? You know, how can we create more of a sense of community to people? Does this mean that people become less ambitious in jobs because they're like, well, people are going to resent me if I earn more? These are all really good questions.
That's Tom. His book, Digital Darwinism, Survival of the Fittest in the Age of Business Disruption, is out now. All of our previous episodes are available at the website eatsleepworkrepeat.fm. And if you enjoyed that, there's another episode coming right now, which is an interview with Chris Barris-Brown. So look for that if you subscribe. See you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit YahooFinance.com, the number one financial destination, YahooFinance.com.